This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. What happened this week and why? Because it's Friday. We'll talk about you and me, the American consumer, and we'll talk about race in this economy and financial risk. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, as I said, the 10th of February. Good as always to have you along, everybody. 5 days in 5 minutes, maybe a little bit more, to be honest with you. That's what we've got to decipher the week that was in this economy. Anna Swanson is at the New York Times. Sudeep Reddy is at Politico. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
All right, Sudeep, we're going to pull back the fourth wall here, as it were, in radio. And I'm going to let people know that before the gong, you and I were talking about all the various scenarios for landings that you have in your hip pocket ready to talk about. And that's where I want to start. Soft landing, hard landing, no landing. What is going on with a job market that is buoyant and with an economy that, while slowing, is still going okay?
Well, right now, why land when you're doing so well? And so you don't really have anything to worry about. The job market is everything. The job market obviously is very strong, remarkably, despite what we're seeing in tech layoffs, despite what we're seeing in some smaller pockets of the economy. The overall job market is still good. But there are really only two options when you look at the overall landscape. There are dozens of permutations, but one is the landing that's, I guess, from the office of Milton Friedman. The monetary policy works with a long and variable lag. It's just going to take a long time for the year of rate hikes to flow through the system. And we'll see the effects of it. And then maybe the Fed can manage through it and navigate it. The other is really the thing that you kind of just have to kind of watch your back around. It's the shock to the economy, where all the pieces are pointing in a direction where, like, okay, well, I hope nothing bad happens, because that's the thing that will hit us. Mm-hmm. And if you just think about all of the signals we have, there's more chatter this week about the inversion in the yield curve and all of the things we've been seeing for a while. Think back, like in 2019, we were seeing these signals for 5 or 6 months into late 2019. And I was among the people just like wondering, scratching my head, saying, maybe this time is different. Those famous last words. And of course, they were famous last words then as well. And bam, we get hit with the pandemic, and the yield curve wins again. And the bond market proves that, like, yes, something was ready to happen. And then it happened. So you kind of just have to see, like, maybe we don't need to land right now. But when we land, it could get bumpy.
Anna, I heard you chuckle, as did I, when Sudhi pulled out the old trope of this time is different. But look, do you suppose it's possible that post-pandemic this time might really be different?
Yeah, I actually do. I mean, I think we're still seeing the product of this kind of weird pandemic economy. And, you know, the economy is a big, complex place, and not all parts of it are cooling down at the same time necessarily. Powell was clear last week that the story is really different for different segments of the economy. For goods, inflation has come down because supply chains have cleared. But for services, the cost of labor plays a more important role, and the labor market is still really tight. So, you know, the worry, I think, is that the disinflation that we're seeing so far is mostly the result of supply chains clearing.
Right.
And then when that's over, the rest of the economy remains really hot, and that benefit from supply chains fades over time. we're just left with this persistent inflation. So I do think that there is a lot of the pandemic economy still bubbling around, and it's affecting different parts of the economy in different ways, leaving us with this very confusing picture.
Yeah, Sudeep, I thought it was interesting that last week in his press conference after the rate hike announcement, he used the word disinflation, I think it was 11 times. And then today, or this week, he did a thing at the Economic Club of Washington, D.C., and there were many, many other Fed speakers this week who said, despite the disinflation, we are not convinced. What do you make of that?
It's you don't want to get burned twice, and they are seeing that. It's really odd and kind of rare to be able to talk about disinflation in a remarkably strong economy and a strong mm-hmm. labor market. Usually, you're hearing about disinflation as a warning sign, like, oh God, here it comes. That's the precursor to the deflation risk conversation. And in this case, it's just like, well, maybe you can actually bring this down without causing remarkable damage. And for the Fed, if this happens, they will say this time was different. Yeah. To be able to bring inflation down from such remarkably high levels to the point where everybody was talking about it was hitting everyone. If they can bring it down without breaking the job market and without causing a broad recession in the economy, that will be a remarkable feat. Probably why most of them recognize that is not as likely to happen. And they want to be cautious about the prospect of pulling it off, because if they declare victory too early, right. Then that will end in failure. That is that they all know that.
Yeah. So enough with Team Transitory, right? I am now on Team This Time Is Different, right? We're going to start a new hashtag. That's all I'm saying.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, well, you know, it's got to start somewhere. Might as well be here. Anna, let me ask you this real quick, and then I want to turn to some other stuff. Consumer Price Index, the next look at inflation, comes out on Tuesday. Spitball it for me here. What do you think it's going to say? And this is pure crystal ball. Go ahead.
So Tuesday is Valentine's Day. We hope Powell will get a lovely Valentine from his sweetheart, the U.S. economy. But I think even if the data is good, it's going to take more than a month to sway them, because Powell also said in the press conference that the Fed needs substantially more evidence to be confident that inflation is going down. And he said the risk of under-tightening is greater than the risk of over-tightening. So I think they're going to keep watching. We'll hope it's headed in the right direction.
All right. Note to self, Tuesday is Valentine's Day. Sudeep, real quick, just because I think we kind of have to, although I don't really want to, but I will. Is there anything that we need to hash over about the State of the Union? And the answer can be no.
I'm not going to give you a hard no here, but there is a lot there. I know we talk about the debt ceiling a lot, but the debt ceiling is a political problem, and being able to air out for a larger swath of the public what the deal is with the debt ceiling and what the choices are in the economy, that will actually define the political conversation for the next 3 or 4 or 5 months until you get to that X date in the debt ceiling. So it all comes back to that. But one of the reasons why the economy is actually reasonably strong, despite getting whacked by the Fed, is that there is still this more sensible stimulus coming into the system. There's funding from infrastructure and climate legislation. All of that can actually help the economy get through whatever the soft patch might have been emerging otherwise. And that's notable.
Yeah. Okay, Anna, last thing, and as we were talking about before the gong, you had a story out today that is balloon adjacent, which comes on a day that the United States has downed yet another object in the sky. We don't know where it came from. But you and your colleague Lauren Hirsch at the Times have been looking at the Biden administration's measures that they are taking to get economically tougher on China, specifically denying them now the flow of American dollars. Could you, like in a minute-ish, outline that story and then help us understand the import?
Sure. So they're looking at an executive order that would ban U.S. firms from investing in Chinese companies that make certain advanced technologies, like advanced semiconductors, AI. So essentially, the U.S. already bans companies from selling the Chinese these technologies. And we also review investments from Chinese firms that come to the United States. But we have very little oversight over dollars going the other direction from the United States to China. So this is kind of the first step of this, of overseeing this, you know, kind of a new front opening in the U.S.-China economic conflict. And I think the action itself is really pretty narrow. It just applies to technologies and direct investment. But I think the big question is, what else does it open up the door for? You know, does it open the door for Congress to maybe, you know, take more action and restrict broader kinds of investment, index funds, you know, other things, because that does seem like the direction that Washington is moving, especially this week with all of the balloon news.
Super, super quick here. Got to point out that the United States is not the only country that has American dollars, right? So there's an international component to this as well.
Absolutely. And right now, the Biden administration is trying to get other governments on board, talking to the EU, other countries in the G7, and they want to convince them not to rush in and take our place when we would pull out those funds. But, you know, there's no shortage of capital in the world. And I think, you know, there are plenty of alternatives for the Chinese. So that might be somewhat of a difficult sell.
Yeah. Anna Swanson from The New York Times, some great reporting on China and what the Biden administration is doing. Also, Sudeep Reddy at Politico. Thanks, you two. Have a nice weekend.
Thanks,
Kai.
On Wall Street on this Friday, equity traders ended a bouncy week, bouncing down. Oil did pop up, though, thanks to our old friends, supply and demand. Details, numbers, y'all know the drill. We got that Gallup poll earlier this week, I think I mentioned it, that showed fully half of us say we are worse off right now financially than we were a year ago. The highest that percentage has been since we were coming out of the financial crisis more than a decade ago. We did get a different survey today, though, that sure looks like it's pointing in exactly the opposite direction. The University of Michigan Consumer Survey shows we are more bullish now than we've been in a year, and its measurement of consumer sentiment has been trending up the past couple of months. Granted, from historic lows, but the trend is up as inflation has cooled. So we asked Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman to check back with some of the consumers he's been talking to over the past couple of years to see what they've got going on.
When we talked a year ago, 28-year-old Michael Huber had a decent job in Rhode Island working in cybersecurity.
I was not doing so great, kind of living paycheck to paycheck. I had just gotten rejected for a house, a small 800-square-foot condo in the basement of a building.
He was making about $80,000 and spending $400 to $500 a month on gasoline. Since then, he changed jobs, got a big raise, bought a house, and mostly works from home now, so he's spending less on gas.
It's as close to a 180 as you can imagine.
Things have been pretty good in construction electrician Tony Liebert's personal economy, too. He's 60 and lives near Madison, Wisconsin.
We're a university government town, so we've got plenty of work in that area. I have gotten raises as prices have gone up.
The pandemic moratorium on student loan payments has been saving 33-year-old Ashley Phillips more than $1,000 a month. She runs a research lab in Durham, North Carolina.
Things are in a lot more secure place financially. We were able to pay off credit card debt, save enough money to put a down payment on a house.
And decided they could afford to have a baby. But inflation has eaten into their financial cushion.
Maybe I'll get the store brand of butter, skip certain things just because I can't stand the thought of paying $4 for an avocado.
And with interest rates so high, Phillips says buying another car is off the table right now. High prices have Tony Liebert worried, too. He coaches youth hockey.
The cost of equipment, the cost of ice time, all of that has gone up tremendously. It's been double-digit inflation in those areas, so it's affecting who can play.
If there's one takeaway from all my interviews, it's that people are cautiously optimistic about their own economies, but totally uncertain what the future holds for the economy. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
You haven't heard us talk much about companies going public lately, for which there is a good reason. The number of companies that had initial public offerings in 2022, 181 of them. And that sounds like a lot, but in 2021, more than 1,000 IPOs. There is a chance, though, that this year is looking a little bit friendlier for companies looking to dip a toe into the public markets. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab looks at why that is.
Sometimes it can feel like the moves made on Wall Street have nothing to do with real life. But Gregory Rice at Boston Consulting Group says that's not necessarily true.
like all markets, the IPO market is tied to a level of confidence.
Confidence in the economy. Remember what it looked like in the big IPO year of 2021? People were out and about after their COVID spending slumber. The stock market was booming and interest rates were low, not just for consumers, but investors. All of this made investing less risky. Then in 2022, interest rates went up and the stock market went down.
And so that confidence wanes and the IPO window narrows or shuts for a period of time.
That period could be coming to a close. The market had a strong January, and interest rates have been slowing. Kyle Stanford is an analyst at the financial data company PitchBook.
And so there is a light at the end of the tunnel, but it's just we don't know how long that tunnel is going to be, I guess.
It means investors are on the prowl again, but they're proceeding with caution. A couple years ago, it was less risky to invest in companies prioritizing growth at all costs.
And now investors are definitely looking for, you know, a positive free cash flow or some ability to maybe turn on and get profitable in the near term.
That's upped interest in industries like pharmaceuticals and software. Now, an increase in companies intending to IPO can reflect optimism about the economy. And if companies think it's headed in the right direction, why not start preparing? Amanda Wu at FTI Consulting says the IPO process takes 12 to 18 months.
I think it's more that's take the time now while we're waiting.
But she says no one can time the market. Not you, not me, and not companies looking to IPO. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Coming up.
They will make false promises of some kind of help with your student loans.
If it seems too good to be true, I mean, you know what they say. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 169 today, about 0.5%, 33,869. The NASDAQ down 71.6 tenths percent, 11,718. S&P 500 added 8 points, 2 tenths percent, 4,090 for the week. The Dow shed 0.1%. The NASDAQ lost 2.4%. The S&P 500 down 1.1%. Some of you may be among the nearly 193 million people in this country planning to watch this Sunday's Super Bowl matchup between the Chiefs and the Eagles. The National Retail Federation is projecting total spending on food, drink, decor, and other Super Bowl-related purchases is going to reach $16.5 billion. $16.5 billion on a football game. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Let's talk oil now, shall we? Not crude, Brent, West Texas, or otherwise, but home heating, about which there is some good news for homeowners and renters, especially in the Northeast. The price of home heating oil is falling. The record high was $5.93 a gallon back in November. Now, though, says the Energy Information Administration, it's down to $4.47 a gallon. Still high, yes, but better than it has been, Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports.
We've got about 6 more weeks left of winter, if the groundhog is right anyway. So far, it's been a relatively mild one.
Now, that's not to say we don't have cold snaps.
Hugh Daigle is at the University of Texas at Austin.
Obviously, in the Northeast, there was a very severe cold snap very recently. But in general, the temperatures are higher.
Which means people who heat their homes with oil are using less of it this year. And that's one big reason the price has come down. Ryan Kellogg at the University of Chicago says another reason is that crude oil prices have been falling.
Heating oil is a refined product that comes from crude oil, so those prices are going to move at least somewhat in sync.
But even though the price of heating oil has dropped,
it's still expensive.
Mark Wolf is at the National Energy Assistance Directors Association.
So there's some glimmers of, gee, it's not as bad as we thought it was going to get, but it's still high.
And a lot of people are turning to the federally funded Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, or LIHEAP, for help paying their heating bills.
We're finding the applications for assistance are way up. We're in numbers like 15, 20, 25% more than last year.
That's partly because of inflation. All kinds of necessities cost a lot more now.
I also think that we're still seeing recovery from the pandemic. There were a lot of families that got behind during that time and have yet to catch up.
Katrina Metzler at the National Energy and Utility Affordability Coalition says a lot of COVID relief, including rental assistance and utility assistance, has also run out. But Congress did approve more funding than usual for energy assistance for low-income families this year.
Our regular appropriation for LIHEAP is only somewhere in the neighborhood of $3.85. So at $6.1 billion, it is more than what we normally would have, less than what we had last year.
And thanks to that, a mildish winter and heating oil prices coming down, Mark Wolf at the National Energy Assistance Directors Association says right now, most states still have money to go around. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Kimberly Adams did a piece for us last week about how Black Americans are more likely than other groups are to be invested in cryptocurrencies. And in the course of reporting that story, she discovered Black people are often overrepresented when it comes to other risky financial products, not just crypto, but payday loans and high-fee check cashing services and high-interest rate loans. Here's Kimberly one more time.
It's not so much that Black people are more likely than any other group to fall for financial scams or risky and expensive financial products. Black communities are often singled out by bad actors.
Black people have long been targeted for these types of predatory services. We can look not that far in the past at the subprime mortgage boom that targeted Black and Latinx communities in particular.
Jacob Faber is an associate professor of sociology and public service at New York University.
There were African Americans that were recruited by mortgage lenders to go, you know, door to door, church to church, to recruit mortgage applicants for these predatory products. And we see similar things with advertising for payday loans and check cashers and rent-to-own stores.
Plus, historically limited access to traditional means of building or maintaining wealth leaves people vulnerable. Michelle Grijalis is a staff attorney at the Federal Trade Commission. She works in the Division of Financial Practices, which investigates and prosecutes deceptive financial practices. Grijalis says it's rare for a scam to specifically target African Americans.
But in many, many instances, we're seeing scams that are marketed broadly, but have an impact on the Black community.
An FTC report found that people living in majority Black communities often lodged complaints about schemes related to credit bureaus, used car sales, payday lending, and student loans.
We're often seeing companies that pretend to be affiliated with the Department of Education or a loan servicer. They will make false promises of some kind of help with their student loans.
Like in this call, which the FTC included in a warning to consumers about these scams.
This message is from the Department of Education. All programs for student loan forgiveness will be stopped immediately in order for you to qualify.
And then there are the business opportunities, open to everyone, but especially appealing to people who feel shut out from traditional investments. I recently attended a multi-level marketing presentation aimed at selling computer hubs and tablets supposedly designed to mint a relatively unknown cryptocurrency token. The all-Black audience was told this system was a way to build generational wealth. Ken Nichols came to the D.C. area from North Carolina to attend and promote.
It makes money for you passively, 24 hours a day. There's no gamble to your money.
If you're skeptical, you're not alone. The companies Nichols is talking about have been flagged by multiple industry watchers as likely scams or pyramid schemes.
A lot of people do think it's a scam. And so most African Americans that I come in contact with, they immediately judge.
But Nichols shrugs it off.
Lord dispatches angels, bring the opportunity to you, you immediately judge. And so because you judged the package that it came to you in, you missed the opportunity. So the Lord said, you must didn't want what you asked for. So I pass it to someone else, the next one in line. But because you judge, you missed the opportunity.
And he says, for now, he's making money, and his colleagues are as well. Jacob Faber at NYU says while it can be easy to blame people for falling into what's likely a very risky financial endeavor, it's important to keep some context in mind.
people are facing really precarious financial situations. And so the kind of hope that a get-rich-quick scheme, if you want to call it, kind of provides, it can be really enticing.
Faber says someone being a victim of some of these predatory financial schemes is often a function of larger structural and economic forces baked into the very nature of our financial system. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
His final note on the way out today. Yes, I probably should have put this in numbers as advertised, but I ran out of time. Oil was up today because Russia said it's going to take its crude and go home. Moscow is going to cut production by 500,000 barrels a day because it doesn't like the Western price caps and embargo on its oil. Brent North Sea, the global benchmark, up almost 3% today. And here's why. Because I can hear you saying, wait, most countries aren't buying Russian oil, so what's the big deal anyway? And that is true. But A, oil is a global commodity. We all need it, and some people are buying Russian oil. And B, we use up every day, basically every drop of oil we produce every day. So even a tiny supply glitch really matters. All right, here's your moment of economic context. Data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture that I saw on Axios. Whole chicken wings are basically a bargain this year. $2.65 a pound in early January. That is down from $3.38 a pound last year at this time. No reason I mention that. Just thought it was interesting. Also, go Chiefs. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Donna Tam is the executive editor. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate minority leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's a speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.